TV Thomas, the name of the seminar, in case you got to the wrong place, this is called Ministry to Different Ethnic Generations. The title that's printed is what I first proposed, and then they came back to me with this title, and then when I came here, I saw my original title printed. So it's the same seminar. Don't think it's a different seminar. So welcome. Welcome. We quickly go through the room and just share who you are, what church, whatever. That will help.
Oh, hello. My name is Goyo, and I serve as an interpreter for a different denominations, ethnic groups and outreaches of different churches, including the Black Baptist Church, Korean Church, Chinese Church, Japanese Church, Spanish Church, Anglo Church. I'm sort of all over the place.
Okay.
And specifically focused with the young people who go on these trips.
Okay.
And they tell them stuff.
Okay.
And I want to know how to best minister to them.
Great.
Thanks.
Mike Lay, I'm a member of Black Christian Church, and I also study mission.
At San Francisco Theological Seminary?
Western.
Western, here, San Jose campus.
Portland.
Oh, you are at Portland?
No.
Oh, he's my friend.
Yes, I
see
you.
Okay.
Hi. My name is Denmark. This is my home church right here at Denmark. I volunteer with middle school ministry. Middle school is my passion. And I was interested in this topic, so I decided to sit in here.
Okay. There's a handout that to pick up. Okay, sister.
My name is Wendy.
Stockton, okay.
And I
in a church?
Yeah.
Okay. What kind of church?
Evangelical
Methodist. Is it ethnic, Caucasian?
It's a church.
No.
We serve different people.
Different people. I just wanted to know that. Right.
Hello. Everything.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm Jordan Wald, and I serve a multicultural church in San Jose. And I wasn't going to be here today because I had to work on my sermon, but Dr. Thomas is going to preach at our church tomorrow. So now I don't have to.
I'm Jim Tyrone at Christ Community Church in Mokita, and it's a multicultural congregation.
Right, great. I'm T.V. Thomas. I want to say I live both sides of the border. I used to live in New York and work out of New York, and so I know New York City fairly well. But then I was led to go teach at Canadian Theological Seminary. I taught there for 20 years, but traveled about 60% of time while teaching. But for the last several years, I've stopped teaching formally. At least not regularly, but I do some modular teachings in some seminaries at Wheaton and Louisville and New Orleans and Wake Forest and Westminster and other places. Modular, but don't do regular. And the reason I stepped out from the formal academic career was because of certain issues, one being the whole issue of addressing ethnic ministries on this continent. So I also happen to chair the Ethnic America Network, which is the partnership of 72 different denominations and mission agencies that promote this kind of events, and we're glad to be here. A ministry to different, you have a handout, we're going to follow that. I want to quickly deal with some definitions which are already given to you. Generation one is when someone comes to host country as an adult. As an adult. So So this is what's called the first generation immigrant. There's a category called, sociologically they call generation 1.5, born outside the country but reared in host country. This was a term that was coined in the 60s by sociologists. I wished we could change it, but we cannot. It's part of literature. But when I deal with this group that does not come to the country as an adult, but comes with their family, there could be a distinction made from 1.1 to 1.9. Okay? 1.9 is more like the second generation because they came much younger. So if they came 4 or 5, they will be acting like a second generation person. But somebody who comes at 15, joins high school, they are closer to 1.2 or 1.3. So I make a distinction, but in literature you find that all of them put under one category. The third category is Generation 2, born and fully raised in host country. Generation 3 is children of Generation 1.5 and 2. And Generation 4, of course, are children of Generation 3. But I call the 1.5, 2, and 3 what I call the hidden generations. And you'll soon find out why I call them hidden generations. Let's deal with Generation 1, and then we'll move on to the others. That is where the focus of this presentation is. What are the needs and expectations of generation? I've called each generation by one term. This is the I came over group. Generation 1 will keep talking about when I came over. I had $7.40 in my pocket. When I came over, I was a poor student and I had to work nights illegally in a restaurant, pizza restaurant, which I didn't like pizza, but I still had to deliver them. You know, these are people who all their life will talk about when I came over. And the kids know every story they've heard many times because they've heard their parents say, when I came over. And they even guilt them. They say, you know, when I came over, I slept on a mat with one pillow on the floor. When I came over, we were 5 of us living in a place where only 2 people could actually live. But we had to sleep because I didn't have money. I sacrificed this for you. So the when I came over generation, here's some needs and expectations. They expect to reestablish themselves successfully in the new culture and society. Yes, there are struggles, but the goal is to be successful. Secondly, seek acceptance from host culture. Whether they give it or not, but they seek acceptance. They're looking for acceptance. Are you going to keep me as a foreigner, or are you going to make me part of American society? They seek acceptance. They normally don't get it readily, but they're seeking it. And whoever gives it to them, they will respect and they will respond. Thirdly, expect to benefit from the positive aspects of the host culture, but cling on to their basic worldview. So they want to get the positive sides of this culture. but they still hang on to the basic worldview which they come with. Because they came here as adults. Their worldview was formed about many things. Okay? Fifthly, need to network with others of same background, language, culture, and nationality. I want you to see the key word need. And friends, it's not just true of Asians and Polynesians and others and South Americans. This was the need of every generation that has come to this country. So when you do history, historical studies of Germans who came, or Polish who came to Wisconsin, or the Italians who came to New York, the Irish who came to Massachusetts, when you go there, they had this permanent need. This is not a new need. This is a human need, not a cultural need. The human need to connect with people from same background. Unfortunately, there are many, many North Americans, mainstream society culture, that do not want to accept that. It's not just a nice thing, it's a need. Did you hear me? It's a need. And if you do not recognize that, you not minister to him appropriately. So network things, that's why they love to be part of associations. They will celebrate things together. They look for ways to, so if it's a church, they like to be people from the same background. Desire to preserve strong family life and values. Expect children to maintain the same family values. Now, what does that create? Okay, tension. Because they say, hey, your cousin's back in Malaysia. Your cousin's back in Pakistan. Your cousin's back in Taiwan. Your cousin's back in Buenos Aires. Or Santiago, Chile. You need to hold the same values. Otherwise you're going to embarrass me when I take you there. First generation does go back. Expect to worship in mother tongue, which is the heart language, and in familiar patterns. Preserve religious practice and zeal. Most of them want to learn to the language of the host country to be functional. Unless they have 59 plus and they feel it's not worth it because I can depend upon my son or daughter to do that for me. But anyone who's 27, 35, they know they need to work and function. They need to learn the language of the host country. Whether they learn it formally or informally, they like to pick up functional communication skills. Have greater responsibility toward family extended family left behind in homeland. And the reason I use the word greater is because the other siblings back home have some responsibility. But because you have come to the land of plenty, you have come to the land of abundance, you have come to the land of opportunity, there's an expectation to have greater responsibility, regardless where you are in the pecking order in your family structure. Okay? Expectation. Desire to bring other family members to the host nation. You say, if I like it here, why not bring others so that we have company? Okay? I tend to intensify patriotism for homeland. You know, these people, if you had met them 3 years before they moved here, you wouldn't have picked up this level of patriotism as 3 years after they land here. They like to know more what's happening. They don't like anybody talking bad. They don't like to read negative things talked about their country in the newspaper. They immediately think it must be wrong. Wrongly reported. They're suspicious of the source of that news. They intensify their patriotism for homeland. They love to make several visits to homeland. So, if they can afford it, we know situations they want to go back, can't go back because they can't bring their funds together to take 4 tickets back. So, but they love to go back. And if they can, they will love. You know, so I had a cousin who went back to Malaysia almost every year in the first 14 years. Every year. It's only 3 weeks, they will make it back. You know, and the thing started slowing down because the kids were getting involved in basketball camp in the summer, mess up their 3-week vacation and all that, and so it became a little more difficult because once every 3 years, then they decided it won't be summer, we'll do it at Christmas time and miss 1 week of school. That's okay. What is grade 7? 1 week without grade 7 will let you live and pass. Okay? So I love to make several visits to homeland. I expect better living standards for their children. What does that do? What happens because of this expectation?
Pressure.
Huh?
Pressure on the next generation.
Right? Pressure on the next generation. What else?
Great sacrifices from the first generation.
Right. They will sacrifice. And quite a bit they sacrifice. And so better living standards, that means you better go to better schools, better degrees, not just getting a job, but you better do better because you got more opportunities. There are more plums to be picked in the orchard, and you better pick them. Otherwise we'll raise you up to pick the plum. desire to see their children marry within ethnic group. First generation. Okay? You know, the way these were all collected over years of talking to one-on-one and watching all over the continent. This is not just pulled. Watching the, and this is quite common to most immigrants most of the time. Okay? Unless they're third culture people. But if they're first culture people coming here, is any questions, comments on so far? Yes.
You said there was kind of a scale of the 1.5 generation. Do you see that also as a first generation of those who came, maybe a student as opposed to grandma?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Agree. There is. There is. But we have not done the, I don't think I've seen any much work done. I can anecdotally tell you what likely is happening.
Right.
At least I don't have research and I have not seen that.
Right.
Seen that. If you came as a student at university, 19 years old,
right,
you know, your assimilation process is faster. And but if you came 34 years old after being an engineer in Hong Kong,
right,
you know, there is difference. Then whether you had family before and children there,
right,
or you know, all that has. But I'm not prepared to speak on that with any authority. I'll keep to what I know, the little I know. Okay? The challenges of hidden generations. Remember what I said, hidden generations, 1.5, 2 and 3 are hidden generations. Why do I call this hidden generations? Because of these reasons. Members of the hidden generations are perceived to be the same as the first generation immigrants because they belong to the same community and look similar to each other. So they're hidden to the majority culture. The majority culture, when they see them, assume you must be just like your parents. And they will, and so people talk to you as if you just came off the boat. Okay? So generation one, I said, is that I came over generation. I call 1.5, I'm caught in the middle generation. The generation two is the generation that says I'm left out. While they're growing up, they feel they're left out. And the generation three is what I call, I want to discover my roots generation. Okay. So 1.5, 2, and 3 are hidden generations because, you know, for Chinese and Koreans, we call them bananas, yellow outside and white inside. You know, they prefer pizza to kimchi or noodles. And of course, they're coconuts, they're, you know, with a brown outside, white inside. Yes.
Do you remember the children of 1.5 and 1, or is that just including the generation
3? What did you say?
I did not see a category for the children of generation 1.5 and 1. Generation 1, Mary and generation 1.5.
Yeah, we haven't done the studies.
But they're children
in
generation 2.
So but they're still generation 2.
Oh, okay. So you mean generation 3 is
the children of two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right.
Oh, so you mean generation 1-1 and generation 1 and 1.5, their children
are same. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so what's the result of this? Here's the result. The lack of distinction of needs and expectations of each generation by both mainstream society and ethnic community. So the generation one says, you would want to be like me. You want to have the same values. You need to like what I like. You should dress like I dress. But the mainstream society also looks at it and says, you're all the same. Because you come out of the same car. You just call out the same car, it must be the same. But they don't make the distinction that the children are either bananas or coconuts or Oreo cookies. Black outside, white inside. Yellow outside, white inside. So there's lack of distinction, and the hidden generations feel you're not taking us seriously. You're not really understanding me. Because you're trying to put me in the same category as my parents. You think I was born in Hong Kong, but I was not. I've never even been there. I didn't know I had these. Generation Y, I came over. 1.5, I'm caught in the middle. Generation 2, I'm left out. Generation 3, I want to discover my roots. Okay? So generation 3 will be looking and saying, I want to go find my grandfather's grave. The generation 2 will seldom say that. But you will drag them to see the grandfather's grave. Okay, result is lack of distinction of needs and expectation noticed by both mainstream and ethnic community. 3.2, members of the hidden generations are treated as outsiders by mainstream society.
Sorry, could you go back to, yeah, please, like, don't say back. Thank you. We don't like that, I don't like that back. I had stroke, I'm sorry.
Okay. Members of hidden generations are treated as outsiders by mainstream society. There's a sense of alienation by the hidden generation. There is a perception there is racism. There's a sense of isolation. As I said in the other seminar, you know, racism is global. All the countries I've been in have always seen racism. Doesn't matter where. You go to Moldova, there's racism. You go to Italy, you go to Paraguay, that's racism. Racism is not, is really a human sin problem. Not a color problem, not a majority problem, is a human sin problem. And the quicker we accept that, we can move towards solving it in increasing ways. But you just need to say, it's a human sin problem. It's not just a human problem, it's not a race problem, it's not a majority problem, it's not a minority problem, it's a human sin problem. And at least as Christians, we need to come to that understanding that it is a human sin problem. And when Christ comes into their life and gets biblical perspective, they can find it easier to conquer it than any other method out there. Okay? So what's the result? The result is lack of sense of belonging. And that's why second generation, second generation, even in ethnic churches, don't have a sense of belonging. Same? Oh yeah. No, more so. More so.
So, when you say the first generation is the healthiest in the sense of their self-identity and self-worth?
I would say they may not, they were bullish enough to land here. That took a little bit of guts to land here. So with that comes this, you know, you don't like me, it doesn't matter, I'm here, I've got my American passport, I'm going to make success. But that's not the position of a child growing up. See, there is this, I'm going to win. I came here. You know, if he was not just thinking about it, he landed here. Whatever method, he landed here. You know, he has got a card. He has got a citizenship or whatever, PR, whatever. See, the lack of sense of belonging. Secondly, a lack of personal value. Thirdly, members of hidden generations face various misconceptions by mainstream society. So it's not uncommon for a 1.5 or a 2, even a 3, an assumption that you can't speak English. Or they're amazed that you can speak English well. How did you learn English? I was born in that hospital. I've been around for 27 years. I went to the school that maybe your nephew went. So they show me. How come you speak English? I'm worried. I didn't have a... And they're amazed that you don't have an accent. They love it if you have an accent. They're disappointed you don't have an accent. So they will ask you where you're from. And he said, oh, I'm from Philadelphia. But where are you really from? those are biting words to the hidden generation. What it does produce, lack of respect and lack of trust. I want you to see it from their point of view. You know, you don't trust me. Point 4, members of hidden generations suffer from varying degrees of low self-image and poor self-identity. I make a distinction. Self-image is our internal perspective of oneself. How do you accept your skin color and racial features and accent and all whatever it is. Self-identity for me is our external perspective of oneself. Our self-identity to the outside world. And so this whole area is a major area we need to address, and it's not being addressed. I want to tell you, those who don't address it, you are sending damaged children into the world. Because of all this impact that we talked about. So can you imagine the list that we talked about? A lack of distinction, lack of belonging, lack of value, lack of trust, lack of respect. And here is lack of, self-image, self-identity. And as a result, lack of self-confidence. So, unless there is a corrective, unless there's a corrective taking place in the process. And so one of the things that happens in Asian families, there's a strong corrective to build up your confidence by excelling in academics. Some of them in academics and the arts, in music, not so much in sports. Jeremy Lin being the exception. Right. So he only played after getting to Harvard, far away from home. But so in music, some of them say, no, we want music. Some, you know, piano, certain things, you know, violinist, guitar player, you know. But definitely in academics, and that's why they take the top marks in many universities. So they compensate the self-confidence to excel in academics and in the arts. 3.5. Members of hidden generations develop a negotiated self-identity for each context of their lives. So they struggle with their ethnic identity and as identity as an American. And they often go through great distress in order to fit into mainstream society. So they have a tendency then to de-emphasize their differences. So what does Generation 2 normally do? Not 1.5, Generation 2 will do is disassociate as early as possible from the ethnic group. So somewhere between 10 and 12, they start telling, I'm not going to go to the Gurdwara. even if there's a lot of good food. I'd rather eat Pop-Tarts at home and watch reruns of Bugs Bunny. They are sending the whole issue, I want to disassociate. So you have to drag them along, you know, you have to bribe them to come. And you have to tell them, look here, your good friend so-and-so is going to be there, you know, and tell them 15 reasons why you need to be there. But because they are trying to negotiate their self-identity. Okay? Negotiate. So in school they're American, at home they're Chinese. In school I'm American, at home I'm Pakistani. And you create, they're negotiating just to keep peace. Waiting for freedom to come. Now 1.5 symbolically identify with selected aspect of ethnic culture. Inside their mind is something else working. But they'll do it just to please that I'm a good son or daughter of mom and dad. I'll show up as soon as the food is over, my friend is coming to pick me up. They plan rescue operations. Now let me tell you one thing I discovered in the sort of the 80s when I was doing research. I quickly discovered that for the ethnic church powerfully legitimizes the ethnicity. The ethnic church powerfully legitimizes, you know, it's okay, I am a Malaysian. It's okay, you know, it's because I go to a Malaysian church. Or a Spanish church. So my legitimacy comes because there's more of us that gather together regularly. You want to check it out, come at 3 o'clock. To Trinity Lutheran Church basement. Okay. So the immigrant church has a big role to play in stabilizing the identity. Okay. So what's the result? Lack of sense of equality. So any questions? Okay.
The lack of sense of equality, does that carry into the non-belief? So if you're a Malaysian church that's under a Baptist label, do you feel the sense of inequality in the Baptist ministry, the Baptist church hierarchy?
Could.
You can get services, you can't get help, you can't get help.
It could. Doesn't have, it's not automatic. But the factors needs to exist that is not encouraging for your growth. But normally, it's not automatic. It's not intended. It's by default you come to that position. But we are talking about individuals where I'm not equally treated for who I am. So, as a personal level. You know, so a family which has got 1.5, and say they are more like 1.2, because they came over from wherever, just 6 months ago, they would look at you as unfortunate. You don't know any of the actors' names. You don't know who the coolest musicians are from our culture. Like, you know, there's a deficit here. You know, how do you call yourself Chinese? Or whatever, right? There's a lot of peer impact. Okay, ready? Ready to go? Next one. How do you reach this generation? What are some characteristics? Let's look at characteristics very quickly. They feel not enough of them, of their own kind in the church. There's never, never more 1.5 than 2. I've not met one yet. If you think, call me collect, I'll pay for it. 1.5 is always a small sprinkle. Right? They wish there was more. The ambivalence of their role at home and church. And that is contributed by the next characteristic, which is there's resentment created because of being asked to be cultural translators and language translators for parents. So they're asked to do an adult function while they still are treated like children. They don't want to embarrass their parents, and they have to tell, don't wear that and come for the teacher's meeting, parent-teacher's meeting. I'll run away from campus. Not acceptable. My friends will laugh. I'm going to be bullied for that. Okay? Forms coming for IRS, for the government. They have to read it and tell what they're supposed to do or not do. And this is ongoing. Telephone bills. Oh, there's a lottery and they see 500,000 and their name is printed against it and the parents think they got 500,000. Sweepstakes. All that they have to process ongoing. It's not just the first week of landing here. Quite a long time. Tell the dad, tell their mom, tell their dad, tell them. And they cannot get on with life. There's resentment. Has easy access to the leadership within family. Because of that, they have access. Pressure to be like their parents rather than adapting to the host culture. So the parents will be whispering, harassing them. Don't want to be like them. Didn't you learn this better? They're caught. They're trying to fit in, but there is a chain to their leg. Not so much so fast. Serve as mediators for different generations. So especially if you have a family which has a 1.5 who came here at 10 years old, and then they have another child, and at 17 you'll find this 1.5 trying to negotiate with parents and grandparents for generation 2. And sometimes, you know, they negotiate with the other way as well. Two ways they have to negotiate. Their independence is stifled. I'll tell you, the group that really has self-identity crisis is this group. It's acute. Everyone I met, 1.5, has a whole bad baggage. Because nobody helped them process. Feel responsible to take care of parents on the long term. And generally this is true, may put up with things they personally don't like. Had to do it. Hey, he'll tell his younger brother, I don't like what they want me to do, but I have to do it. I know you don't feel anything about it, you feel like it's stupid. But I have to do that stupid thing because I came over with them. So what are the expectations? Our parents to accept and respect them. They feel parents use them, don't respect them. Use them as cultural translators, use them as language translators. Use them to negotiate. Don't value them and respect them enough. Both cultures, they want both cultures to fully accept them. They want a new start and a fair chance in society. New start and a fair chance. But they sense, because of those iron chains, they sense, I can't go as fast as I want. My dad expects me to be at the restaurant at 4 o'clock to help. But I want to play football. And my dad wants me there because I can speak Chinese. And supervise the crew of other waiters and waitresses and handle the cashier's role when my dad has to go for a run to pick up things. Better lifestyle in the future through education. So they themselves feel, man, I'm going to get out of this hole through education. My passport to freedom. What is the ministry pointers to 1.5? Number one, you affirm and respect them. You know, we can unpack a lot of this. We don't have time in this seminar. Develop relevant ministry to them. And so it may not be a full program, but I think the church needs to say, who are the 1.5? And we need to find ways to minister to them. It may be one-on-one or one to two people, and we need to isolate them. They may go through all the other programs, but you need to pull them out and focus and minister. And, you know, develop the self-identity crisis, diffuse that slowly, and we need to really minister to them. Relevant ministry. So it's not a program I'm talking about. I'm talking about focus and intention and concentration. Thirdly, help them figure out their self-identity and to own it. Not going to happen in one session or one seminar. It's going to take a little bit of work, one-on-one, sit in this thing. I've worked with several, so I know it's not easy and it's not fast. But you have to keep at it, because my goal is before they leave home, I want them to sell their self-identity issue. In college, it's difficult to catch them. Unless some other ministry is going to pick it up. I don't want to give that chance. I want him to leave her or him to leave home with their self-identity settled and accepted and owned.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I really feel like I need something more concrete when you say help them to figure out the point before that. Develop relevant ministry to them. I would like really concrete examples.
I mean, basically you have to meet with them really one-on-one. I don't even like one and two. I don't like. Because I simply say, when I go and see a doctor said, both of you have the same problem, I think, let me examine both of you. He doesn't do that. But in the church we do that all the time.
Okay, is so, that for the diagnosis part?
Or? No, both even the solution, because he's not going to open up. His situation is totally different.
So the only relevant ministry you can have is one-on-one?
One-on-one first. But he may be plugging into Gen 2 ministry, young people's ministry. You know, he may be. That I'm not going to stop that. You know, I'm not stopping that. But pull them out to make sure that this is dealt with. It's going to be a process. Talk about it. What's the issues? What are the challenges? How do you feel? You know, and it's all going to be trust and relationship and love and care and, you know. And they'll start opening up. They will. Most, I've not failed with one so far. I've failed with second gen, but I've never failed with 1.5.
But you made the point that there's never enough for 1.5.
Yeah, they don't feel there's enough of a group. They wish, you know, if there was a big group, which seldom is.
Right.
You know, I don't know whether I've seen 10 of them in the same church. And definitely not from the same culture. I develop a strong peer support group. And it may be, all of them may not be in your church. So because in my city, I know the other churches, I said, hey, you guys form a group. Once a month you get together and do things. But it's because of, I've got a good relationship with all the pastors, all the at least Bible preaching pastors, that I call up and they will say, hey, they're open. I'm not here to raid their person. I said, we are not here to raid your people. To get these guys together and to help them. Do a Bible study together. You know, fun things together. It's not every week, it's once every quarter or so. Yes?
Listening to what he's saying, about, you know, he's a one-on-one. Well, that's the ideal, I would think. But, because I work with these different ethnic churches and youth specifically, one of the things that I've seen work, it's like, you got a big old group, right? These youth. And the youth groups are supposed to be for the, all the youth, right? But because it takes time to choose the little Timothys and don't have to be the whole group, but pour and invest in two, three. And there, I've seen where investing and spending that time pays off because those three or two or what will impact the others. Okay. That's just an observation.
No, but I want to tell you, most culturally different people are not going to open up in a group, even in a two or three. Because they always say, you don't understand my soul. You just don't understand our situation. One on one they will. Sooner or later they open up. Because they say, I can be wrong and it's okay. You know, nobody else is hearing what's happening because I'm a protector of my family. I don't want my family to be seen as jerks.
So the one-on-one is with 1.5 generations.
Around 1.5.
Not necessarily with two.
With two, but 1.5. This is 1.5. Very, very relevant. Okay? Provide counseling as needed. And when I say provide, you may not be the best person if they got acute issues. Thank God, I helped start a counseling clinic. So I just refer them with a note. It's not mine. I helped start it, but it's independent. I am able to say, hey, deal with this, because I don't have time, and I may not have enough skill. Okay, how do you reach generation two quickly? What are the characteristics? Did not choose to be born here. So one of the things they strike back at their parents and say, I didn't choose to come here. I would have gladly grown up in the Philippines. But I was born here. Face the fact. Mommy, do you remember the time I was born? They say, I didn't choose to be born here, so don't try to make me feel guilty that I'm of this culture. So, the other self-identity crisis they go through, and they don't maybe say it, is, why wasn't I born white? So when they are very young, innocently they may ask that question. If they go to a largely white thing and say, why was I not white? Well, my friends, that question is painfully asked quietly. Especially when they are absolute minority.
Forever,
You know, but they have to sort it out. But till this sorted out, they will ask this question. It would have been much easier if I was born white. Turn, initially tend to shy away from ethnic groups. When I say initially, I'm talking about around 12 plus, you know, 5 and 6, no problem. 7, no problem. 9, 10, they're talking about themselves. Are you going? If you're not going, I'm not going. But you may still lose the argument and still have to go. But by 12, they're ready to have a verbal, heated dialogue in the kitchen. Intercultural in dialogue and socializing and open to assimilate readily to majority cultures. So they were intercultural in dialogue and socializing. Here's one. They want to influence their parents to fully adopt host culture. They remind parents, they say, this is not Uganda. I just heard it less than 2 weeks ago. Dad, this is not Uganda. As I was coming out of the car, I heard second generation telling, you like their money, you better like their culture. They are looking for ways to, how do we change our parents?
I'm curious,
but you usually 1.5 doesn't find a 1.5 person. That's where the problem is. It would be ideal to get two 1.5 married, then maybe the study will be a little more different. Usually they don't, they marry, you know, whoever. Two Caucasian, you know, so it's hard to sort that out. It'll be interesting if we can find those. They embrace host culture definitions of personal freedom and responsibility. So they're not just know about it, they embrace it. And they are constantly saying, how come Steve can do that? How come he can go and stay out till 10? And he won me back at 8. Not fair. I heard it in my home. I just said simply because I'm your father and I'm not Steve's father. Look at me. Am I Steve's father? So we raise three in this society where we don't have many from our background in my city, at least when the kids were growing up. Prefer to make personal decisions and that, and they struggle with parents on that. Parents want group decisions, they want personal decisions. That's what extended family consensus, they want personal decisions. Who cares about Uncle So-and-so? Use less of their parents' mother tongue. Some understand, but can't use it well. So they lean towards. They strive for high achievement through higher education. And that's usually because generation one is really expecting that. It's ingrained even when before they go to kindergarten. Generation two, open for intercultural marriages. I want you to listen to this. They listen with their eyes and think with their hearts. I'm not going to explain. I'm going to get you to. This is good. Good for you. It's part of the learning process beyond the seminar. That's where a seminar is good. A good seminar makes you think beyond the seminar. What are the expectations? Number one, accepted fully by host culture. Parents to act as locals. Don't embarrass me. If you came here, act like you are here. They want to succeed financially. They are open to climbing the socio-political ladder. The 1.5 will be reluctant to do this. But generation 2 will get into the mix. They want relevance and excellence at church. So if you go to immigrant churches, many of them started in a struggling manner. Many of them started, you know, in schools or inconvenient times on Sunday, mid-afternoon, you know. And so there is a poverty mentality in the immigrant generation. You know, every penny squeezed. You know, it's the same idea that those who grew up, who went through the
depression.
You know, you can see why they say what they say, sitting in their boards, and you're tired of hearing that. Is it depression? A long time gone. You know, unless your personal depression goes to your psychologist. But so because of that, there's a tendency to make do. You know, photocopy machine that gives you some extra color, extra spots, and you see it in every bulletin. You know, they see a sound system, you know, that was good for 120 people but terrible for 400. You know, they're looking for excellence. Because their generation, mainstream generation, is also looking for the same thing. So they're also looking for the same thing. Okay? What is the ministry point? Is number one, practice kingdom of God mindset. When I say kingdom of God mindset, see, I was willing to let my children leave my church and go to another church as long as they love Jesus. That's kingdom of God. Per se, if you don't find it meaningful here, and you're not excited about coming to church, I'm not pastor of the church, but you know, even if I was, I would bless them to go. But that's not very common encouragement. Okay. People were shocked. I said, hey, I'm more interested in following God and love Jesus and follow God than being in my church. My church is a good church. But it's not scratching where they itch. They need to go. Remain in the kingdom. Second, ensure culture issues do not set and control agenda for the church. Major reason why many kids are bailing. They're sick and tired of hearing messages that are biblical, practicing cultural Christianity. Again, develop relevant ministry to them. And again, this could be more group. But here's what you need to do. Foster a sense of belongingness. And when you want to foster a sense of belongingness, it's not just on the second generation side. You need to try to help parents to cultivate that as well. You need to tell the elders of the church. You need to cultivate belongingness. They are not just valuable when they can write checks. They're valuable now. Include them. And, you know, allow them. They're bound to make mistakes. Include them. You know, involve them. And one of the ways Western culture defines belongingness is doing something together. So getting the second generation to come in and set up chairs for a banquet is to say you're important. So guys, just tell you, go to set up. As mundane as that is, it's powerfully because we belong here. We're important here. And they love it if they came as a group. Provide help for self-identity clarification and development. When I say provide help, maybe there needs to be a retreat that deals with self-identity as your major focus. Talk about it. Mentor them individually if possible. Encourage, empower them in ministry context. I'll tell you one area where they love to do is to work on PowerPoints, work and play with the controls. So many kids love to do that. Not everybody, but some. Have a choir or worship band once every 6 weeks. They lead worship. Develop small group experiences and community. Use the English language wherever possible in decision making. Our annual meeting, you could have a second generation who's 23, 24 years old, comes to an annual meeting of an ethnic church, and majority of the discussion is in the ethnic language. They're right away saying, you don't count. You don't count. So either have a translator, not just to say, but have a translator, or do the thing in English if possible, so that they're included. I made this statement, I'll repeat. I met someone who I'd met when he was 9 years old. Several years later, I was back in the church, and he's now about 35. I said, Dr. Thomas, I know you. How do you know me? Oh, you were, when I was 9 years old, you came here. I remember you preached this. You remember what I preached? I said, give me the sermon. If you remember that long, I want that sermon. And then he said, how you doing? Then he, I don't know what he had confidence to say, because the sermon of whatever I did had nothing to do with this topic. He said right away to me, he said, you know, during the week I'm in charge of $33 million portfolio. On Sunday, I'm treated like a grade 9. And I've got two kids running around. One is in grade 1. I'm treated like a grade 9. That statement encapsulated.
Treated like a what?
A ninth grade, grader.
So why would these people still stay in the church?
Huh?
So the good question is, why do these people still stay in the church?
Maybe they have no...
Find anywhere else, though.
In some communities, you know, of course, San Jose, this area, there's all kinds of options. You need to know many places you don't have this kind of options. You have a lot of options here. But to place yourself in Bemidji, place yourself in Ottumwa, Iowa. Huh? A lot of places, you don't have options.
Something that's just very different out here. I grew up on the East Coast, and the same thing, because if you go to an ethnic church, then you go to all white church, and then you don't feel you belong. But out here, Silicon Valley is very different.
Yeah. I mean, this is...
The experience is...
Yeah, experience. Right. Okay. I challenge them to consider full-time vocational ministry. This, we have failed. So, it doesn't matter Chinese, Korean, or whatever, we don't have people coming from second generation enough to move into ministry. In fact, your elders' children have been told, don't go into ministry by their parents, because we treat them bad. They don't say the last part. But So I want you to know this is real, real stuff. Okay, quickly. I know we had trouble with this thing. Plant second generation churches. And hopefully second generation churches will be intentionally multicultural. Or second generation of multicultural churches. Okay? Quickly. Generation 3. Happy to be born here. Fully comfortable with mainstream society. Does not know grandparents' mother tongue. Quite independent in decision making. Like to know where he or she is going and what he or she is doing. Higher education is not as high a priority as 1.5 or 2. As they're usually very disappointing to grandparents. And I've already started hearing that in the Chinese, in some Korean circles. She just wants to be a hairdresser. I don't know, what's wrong with her? She just wants to be a hairdresser. Extremely open for intercultural marriages. What are our expectations? Full acceptance by mainstream society as local nationals. Earns to understand background and roots. So though it's fully accepted in this society, feels totally comfortable, that gets an earning to want to know roots. They want to go back. So we don't have too many there. It doesn't matter. I want to see where our family farm was, or where we lived on the 17th floor in Hong Kong. How to go? And they will. If you can help them go, it's great. Otherwise, they will go. Determined to climb the social, political, and corporate ladders. Because they feel totally comfortable. Wants to see tangible results for personal investments made. They're not going to write a check for some generic cause. You need to show there's going to be returns and what the returns would be for whatever investments they make. So what a ministry point is, offer seminars on understanding cultural backgrounds. Encourage short-term trip to learn about heritage. So if there are sufficient of them. So do a mission trip plus a heritage trip. So make it valuable. We're going to do mission work. We're going to go and help out. But we're also going to do some heritage trip. And parents would love to even support that. Yes.
What's the percentage of deep breathing at the church? Is it basically zero?
Well, it's coming. I'm just preparing you to not be caught after they come. But the numbers are starting to come. G3, there is. So there are Chinese churches with G3 now in Canada.
The English ministry of the church, like the English ministry of the Chinese church, is G2 and G3.
It's already starting to happen. In Latin American, I mean Spanish, huge G3. Huge G3. Planned intentionally intercultural churches or multicultural churches. Or second generation churches. Facilitate practical relevant ministry. Again, they want to touch, they want to feel, they want to walk. I can see my kids, they are willing to go and do the nitty-gritty downtown work that their parents or grandparents would never have wanted to do that. Great. Sorry we lost a few minutes there starting, but I trust helpful. So we have not gone to the practical side. I hope we develop perspectives and start developing. Otherwise we'll have to have a 3-hour seminar. You know, when it comes to books, there's not been much written. There's more articles and more dissertations. And the dissertations are very Asian American. I think the Spanish side is not doing quite, and the South Asian side is not caught up. But more Asian, Chinese, Korean, Japanese, there's more dissertations that have been done. All the rest are still the same. So the book Coconut Generation is a South Asian, Sam George, and he does in one chapter talk about the other ethnic, Korean, Filipino as well. Coconut Generation has got good pointers. What else do I have in that? Right, that is the edited group between, I'm not a psychologist, but I learned a lot by editing the book. I read 400 books because of editing that book. And the only reason I lent my name to do that book was because the other person is a PhD in psychology and PhD in theology, but is not known, and we knew just by him the book could not go, but they know me as a ministry person, and in South Asian circles counseling is still a stigma. And they know if I lend my name, they say, maybe it's touchable. So I forced myself to having to read every article that he vetted, and then I went through theologically, and so I had to read a lot of books to see. So I read 400 books just to get that book.
And is that for Caucasians that are...
Yeah, just it's South Asian, general South Asian.
Okay, so would it be different though if they have a different...
There is, but we did more generalizing. It's a primer, it's a primer. Now the others are working, Before the Wedding Bells is a very good premarital book for, it was written for South Asians, but a lot of Asians are... OM India is saying Asia is buying them quite a bit. So it deals with questions that South Asians and South Asian families are concerned. So So, the other two are not Christian per se, gathering and working with immigrant families. Great?
Great.
Thank you.